and life for free. But you can give them to the birds and bees. I want money. That's what I want.
Well, North Bay Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tim Howe. She's AV on the board. SP futures up 450 after carnage yesterday. Dow futures up 47. NASDAQ futures down 975. It was a bad day if you were long yesterday. If you were long anything. Oil, I guess was unchanged. Gold whack, silver whack, everything whack, for God's sake. Even the COVID stocks were down. People waiting for the, I talked to somebody the other day, it was going to be rich and, battery day for Tesla. That didn't work out so well. And I said, sometimes you want to sell the rumor, buy the news, or the other way around. Buy the rumor, sell the news, and, he'd have none of it. He's kept all his Tesla, and it's been getting its ass kicked the last 2 days. Do we have Mr. Lou?
I am on. How are you?
I don't know. I'm all right, I guess. I'm just looking at the world, and I'm looking at it. I wish it was the rear window of this world we got now, but it isn't.
I'm a big fan of Scott Adams, and, when Ginsburg passed away, on Friday night, his tweet was something to the effect of 2020 has not finished bitch slapping the Republic. And, I had told somebody a month ago that probably the thing that would most introduce chaos into the further chaos into the electoral process would be the passing of Justice Ginsburg. So, I want to talk a little bit about that just from my perspective. And I had a very tangential connection to her appointment to the Supreme Court, because when I was an associate working in a law firm in Virginia, I'd been in the military, I was tagged to do a little bit of work on the Virginia Military Institute case, which was, I think, her first opinion. And it kind of set the tone for something that I think a lot of people kind of lost track of. I really don't think of her as a particularly effective justice, and mainly because it seemed to me that what she wanted to do was be a legislator. She was hell-bent on writing, rewriting law or readjusting statutes that really created cases that in a way that I think, and a lot of other people think, was not really what you want in a judge. And the VMI case was a classic example. I don't want to get too much into the weeds on this because it's old history, but if you read her opinion in that case, she effectively ignores the findings of the lower courts, which she's not supposed to do, and basically retries the case. And I thought the opinion was pretty bad, but I also thought it was characteristic of a lot of the stuff that she wrote. She really looked at the court as a way to implement certain ideological positions that she had, rather than simply assessing, hey, does this law pass constitutional muster or statutory muster? And I that's a real problem. And it's one of the reasons why I find it ironic that she's considered an icon for whatever reason. And this kind of confusion in her role as a justice extended, all the way up, even until the time she made the comments about Donald Trump before the 2016 election, which were manifestly improper.
But true. But true.
I think she lost track of her role.
But true. They're manifestly improper, but true. It's always amazing how...
It doesn't matter.
Well, who gets
she's,
the...
She's a judge. She has to understand... She has to understand that her role in this thing is to stand above this. She can express a private opinion as to whatever she wants, and she can vote whatever way she wants. But for her to come out and throw stuff like that into the mix in the middle of a campaign is simply improper.
Was she absolutely correct that the man has no idea what it is to be a president in terms of
protocol? I think that was her constituency's position. I think he's proved that wrong. I think he does have an idea of what it means to be president.
Really? And any kind of rule or any kind of gentleman's agreement, any kind of I think that he's part and parcel, and so far he's not the one who's done it. It was in motion long before him. This whole idea that everything is, you can do whatever you want. There's more, there is no such thing as a gentleman's agreement. There is no such thing as proper. I don't know. I mean, anytime there's change, everywhere.
Chief, who is it that said politics ain't beanbag?
I get that part. What I'm saying is every time somebody in any kind of position puts an opinion out there that somebody doesn't disagree, that somebody doesn't agree with, it's always improper for them to say their opinion. Every single time, as long as it disagrees with yours or mine.
No, I mean, every single time. I don't have any problems with politicians calling Donald Trump names if that's what they want to do. I have big problems with the Supreme Court justice doing it, especially before.
By the time she said that, how many rotten things had Trump said about the Supreme Court? 1,000?
It doesn't matter.
It does. Really the guy's running for president.
I know. But that's not an excuse for her to say something.
Okay. I understand that. And if I had kids, I would teach them that too. I was taught that way. But that's my world is not the world anymore, Lou. Neither is yours. I mean, it's unfortunately because you and I have come out of the same world.
In any event, my point on her is I would never wish that she passed away. I'm sorry that it happened at this point. Or at any point, but I don't think that if you look at her record, that she was the icon that people tried to make her out. And frankly, the reason we're in this situation right now is that her ego would not let her resign when she clearly could have and probably should have. Her health was terrible, has been terrible for, 7 or 8 years, when she could have resigned with Obama in charge and gotten the seat filled with somebody that the left actually liked.
Explain to me this, Lucy. Since Obama put somebody up 9 months before or something like that, and they wouldn't even, how long in advance would she have had to have quit? Don't tell me 10 months or 11 or 12. Mitch McConnell's the biggest sleazebag I've ever come across.
I don't know, but she had complete control over when she could have resigned.
She would have had to resign in Obama's first term when she didn't feel that bad.
No, she could have resigned in 2014 or 2015.
Why do you say that?
Why?
Yeah.
Because she was having significant health problems then.
What makes you think that he could have put somebody through?
That affected her ability to hear cases.
I'm going to go out on a ledge here. And I'm going to say, and I don't think anybody, literally anybody can tell me I'm wrong, I don't think anybody that Obama put up as soon as the Republicans won the Senate would even have been considered. That's how big of a sleazebag McConnell is. So if she would have, if she would have resigned the first month of when Obama leaves, 2016, if she had resigned in January 2014, she wouldn't have got, nobody would have, the seat would still be empty. It would have been empty for
I disagree, but I don't think there's no basis for you to say that.
Well, because
the kicker was that Garland gets nominated within 8 months of the election or 10 months of the election.
Yeah.
Whatever McConnell's move, I get it, I understand it. I didn't agree with it. I thought there should have been a hearing. Whoever got nominated might not have been approved. But I think if she had sat down with the Obama people and said, look, my health is terrible and I'm going to I'm going to leave, they would have coordinated that in such a way that there would have been an approval.
Okay, but we shouldn't get into a debate because we have other good stuff. When I say good stuff, a good life, not the fact the man died. You can't tell me that McConnell is only a 9 month sleazebag and wouldn't have been a 16 month sleazebag.
I don't have any reason. I don't have any reason to believe that.
Why? When the man has power, he has power. He doesn't care.
No, his statements were he put it in the context of an election year.
Okay.
Had that happened, in 2015, I don't think he would have done it.
So based on what's happened in the last week, when we're clearly in an election year, and the man can't even remember his own lies, what makes you think why we can't even do it when the man's in his in when we have the new Congress, and oh by the way, it's his lame duck period is now the last 2 years, I declare. Why would you ever think that man has a and I'm not talking just about him.
Because it would have been really dangerous for a number of legislative issues for the court to be eight justices for more than one term. I think that would have been unacceptable, I think, to the American people, and I think that's what drives it.
I think
McConnell is not out of the mainstream on this.
Whoever's pulling his strings.
The majority of the polls, anyway, show the majority of the people say to fill the vacancy. I want the vacancy
what polls?
Filled
Lou,
just because I don't want a tie erupting when all hell breaks loose after the election.
I'm going to say that you want to make sure that Trump gets in.
I can't rely on, and you can't either, the people that were appointed by Trump to vote in favor of Trump. You certainly can't count on John Roberts.
Okay.
To vote that way.
And by the way, I've read a lot on that subject, and if there is nobody elected, he'll end up with a 4-4 vote, probably, if Roberts flips. And now everybody's figuring out which appeals court it goes through first time, because I'm just saying, Lou, you and I have to, somewhere in the middle, I've learned a few things now that I'm in the middle. Not that I'm any smarter than you. I know I'm not. As a matter of fact, I wish I was, but I've learned that there are no limits to the indecency of these people.
Oh, there's no limits to the indecency on either side. I agree.
So if she would have resigned 5 months before, whatever the guy's name was, I keep forgetting, we got nominated by. Well, what makes you think he would have taken her?
I think that from a political standpoint, there would have been a move to fill and nominate the person, and I think there would have been a hearing.
Lou, I honestly believe, and I don't want to be right this guy. I want to talk about Gail Sayers a little bit. But
yes, I do too.
I think that the article written by, I was mentioning this yesterday or the day before, the article written by, the name, who the hell did one of Tricky Dick's daughters marry? One married Eisenhower and the other married this other guy. The other guy is now in like this think tank, and I have this piece of paper I should have dug out yesterday, except the market was all over the place. Actually, it wasn't all over the place, it was just down. So it was a busy day. Then he wrote this thing about how the reason why America is so screwed up is and why we can't learn to talk to people is because we haven't hit bottom yet. We're not going to hit bottom, Lou, until one of the sleaze bags, somebody in charge of the Senate, is going to look at a newly elected president and say, I don't like you, we're not going to put any of your judge people in for like 4 years. Until finally, people get up in arms and they say, hey, screw this. We're supposed to appoint people there, get some people that both sides agree on. You know, Ginsburg, like her or didn't like her, what she was, a 93-2 pick, whatever. Let's get back to that. But we're not there yet, Lou, unfortunately. We might not be there in our lifetime. But right now...
I mean, I agree. But how much lower can it get, Chief? We just had a coup attempt against an elected president.
Let's ask ourselves, how much lower can it get? When Obama got in there, the first thing McConnell said... His first term was that his biggest mission was to make sure he was not reelected. Now, is that good government?
Know.
Is that good government? And the same, he is still there, Pelosi's still there, Schumer's still there. Tell me what's wrong with this place.
I agree. I mean, you're not going to get any argument from me. I would love to see, a kind of nonpartisan or a benefit of the country and understand what the election meant kind of mentality. I will say this, I'll end my comments with this. What has happened right now, to a great extent, in my opinion, was driven by what happened to Brett Kavanaugh. And the idea that you're going to let something like that pass without taking revenge is a pipe dream.
Lou, being of Irish ancestry, at least half, and still recently... Well, not recently. I haven't seen him in ages. He's not doing so hot, but he the guy from one of my buddies named Murphy, of course, not my lawyer buddy Murphy. Well, Rory, who's the golfer, the guy from Ireland. Well, Murphy.
Okay.
He's one of the best golfers. I can see his face. I can't remember his name.
Are you thinking of McIlroy?
Yeah, yeah. So my Irish buddy goes, he's not friggin' Irish. He's from the north. What's the matter with you? I'm like, okay. I mean, this whole thing where I hear all day long, mostly from the right. The right sends me something. They're trying to cure me or something. But now that I'm in the middle, I'm uncurable. Plus, I'm also very lonely in the middle, which is not so good. It just is like trying to figure out who shot the first guy in the Irish versus the other guys. You know, I mean, or the Hatfields and McCoys. It reaches the point where everything the right does is because the left did it first, and the left does is because the right did it first. Lou, that gets you no place. We both know that.
I'm with you. I'm just saying. I think that's the basis for a lot of what's going on.
Well,
right
this
now.
Morning, here's what I think's the basis. Unfortunately, I'm waiting for AV in front of her place. Of course, all these people are out walking their dogs. They were there ahead of her. I don't know how they got there ahead of her. But so I see one guy with a mask. There's a lady walking by without a mask. So the guy walks in the street around her. I'm like, this has gotten so out of hand, Lou. I can't even.
Heaven sold the time.
I know. This is crazy. So anyway, so I hear our governor is actually on the air talking about the percentage of over by Galena in Dade County, Joe Davies County, sorry. The percentage of positive tests is up to 7. Now, Lou, there's very few things that I can be a little bit gospel on, except I'm not that bad at economics, not that bad at option trading, and I'm pretty good at math. Anybody, if we had a serious random sample where every day we were picking out 100 people in that county, we went to their door and we had people who were so damn diligent that that's all they cared about, and we saw a dramatic pickup in the tests on our samples, I'm going to say that I would sense there was a problem, in a sense that there was more people contracting the disease than that. When you look at the amount of people just happened to show up for a test, and you're worried that the amount of people who showed up, that 93% of them weren't there for a lark, or 95, it's 93. I can't imagine a fourth grader saying anything that ignorant, and that here's their government. Why anybody would even remotely think that he can say that on TV or radio? I have no idea. Where are these people? Where's their education from? And right after that, I get this NBA player going crazy on the air. Evidently, he was on national TV doing the game, and he blurted out about how they need to indict the policemen and do this stuff in Louisville. Lou, I don't know what happened down there. I've been reading my fanny off for the last 2 days trying to find out everything about it. The bottom line is, Lou, out of all the people that have an opinion, I probably read more than most at this point. I don't have any idea what happened in that place. And I know that for us to be Americans, there has to be, if there's a grand jury system, there has to be something. You sort of have to trust the people. Now, I'm not saying that this country is not capable, at least in historic times. Hopefully not today, hopefully. I know this country is capable of having 15 people on there and saying in the right areas and whatever, saying, God, this policeman's white and this lady's black, I guess he's innocent. I hope that doesn't happen anymore, and I hope it didn't happen as much as people think it happened. But the fact is, look, everybody's got an opinion, even though they're not there. How could I ever have an opinion on what happened there? I'm sure sorry the lady's dead, and I sure wish the policeman used a little more restraint, and her boyfriend. But how the hell do I know how does everybody have an absolute solid opinion on what happened in a place they weren't even there? And this grand jury, whoever they were, I'm guessing, what would you say, sat 50 hours in front of testimony? They have to know way more than I do. I mean,
it sounds to me, based on what I read and the statements that were made yesterday, a couple of things happened. The first that happened is that you've got this attorney for the family immediately start putting out false information that becomes the narrative within particular communities. You know, she was in bed. She was shot. They didn't knock on the door. They just knocked the door down. Whatever. And so that gets out into the mainstream, and that starts coloring people's opinions. And you know, the old bit about a lie getting, you know, three times around the world before the truth gets out of bed, is absolutely the case. It's Michael Brown all over again. It's Trayvon Martin all over again. I've said this on the day before. There are unfortunately.
Lou, you got to move to a different section of the room here. You're breaking up, but I guess. Lou, here's where I'm coming from, and I'm with you on this. Unless I know that I'm in the mind of one of the people in the grand jury, or many of them, or however many it takes to be a majority, unless I'm in their mind and I know they say, man, this guy really screwed up and he shot this girl pretty much on purpose and ruled the other way, how can I, it's like how many black people, white people, people from Illinois, people from out of state troopers stop? Unless I know I'm in the guy's mind and say, geez, Lou Michaels just blew by me at 95, but he's white, he's okay. The next guy's black, and I pull him. Unless I know that happened, how can I accuse anybody? How do I not know that on the Dan Ryan, you know, 95% of the people that I'm going to see over 90 miles an hour are going to be black, and yet near me, 95% of the people blowing through stop signs are going to be arrogant, yuppie women in whatever, SUVs. I mean, I know that's going to happen. I mean, why is that? And on the Stevenson, if I'm going to pull over motorcyclists going 100 miles an hour, most of them are probably going to be Hispanic. This is an observation, Lou. I mean, do I have to wait for a black guy in a Stevenson to get him as well before I can pull a Hispanic guy? I mean, this is crazy. Unless I know that the policeman is absolutely letting his group go and only getting the other guy, then yeah, I have a real problem with that. And always did. But how do people put themselves in other people's mind? I can't do it.
Well, it's because they have a preconceived, and all of us do, but the people that are making these statements have a preconceived notion of a narrative, a particular storyline, and they adjust. That's their worldview, and the facts that they hear, they adjust to plug into that worldview. And I mean, I have the same problem. I try to filter it as best I can, but that's what's going down. What I saw with the Breonna Taylor situation. By the way, did you guys have trouble in Chicago last night?
There was a thing on the south side, but it was pretty peaceful from what I gather. Okay. I don't know. AV, you can look that up, but I looked last night if there was any problems from them. I know they called a friend of mine who has one of the medical marijuana places, and they were putting. I'm sure they had the garbage trucks out. I don't know if
medical
they
medical marijuana. What does it have to do with?
Because they the last couple of raiding binges they got broken into. The people that are doing the raiding and the looting have nothing to do with the people that care about the protesting. It's all about going.
I think that's true. Although it doesn't seem there's a video I saw last night didn't seem there was a lot of separation between the protests and the guys that were, you know, turning over tables and harassing people dining, and then in downtown Denver, some people attacked a car, and I mean, it just the civil unrest thing is just nuts.
It's just silly, and I
really do think that there's got to be a stronger response to it, because what's going to start happening,
yes.
is. People are going to start taking the law into their own hands.
Well, and right now what's happening, Lou, is they're leaving.
Yeah.
Which is not good either. I mean, Lowry's, I don't know if you were a prime rib guy, Lowry's just announced they're closing. They got a big hunk of real estate. So they're saying it's not so much the COVID, although that's certainly not helping, but they said nobody wants to come downtown.
Well, that's right. I'm certainly agreeing with that, because why would you go downtown if you've got the risk of running into having your car surrounded or being, you're just walking down the street and suddenly finding yourself in the middle of a flash mob? I agree with that.
We only have a minute here, so when we keep Gail to after. By the way, I met him on many occasions when I was on the when John and I were doing a score at the golf outing and stuff, and. Talked to him, you know, a solid hour, and I don't think I've ever met a more pleasant guy. Just a saying. Not to mention the guy could run a football. SP Futures down 3, NASDAQ Futures down 37. Not exactly a big bounce after yesterday's fiasco. When we come back from break, I'll catch everybody up to what's going on everywhere.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI ProDirect can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI ProDirect. Cheap prices, along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Howie's Mr. Lou Michael. She's AV on the board. So Lou, I get to brightens up my day a little bit. Some of the guys that were funniest dudes around when I worked at Pullman. How many years ago was that? 40-some. I get stuff in the mail from some of the stuff's pretty good. Is this you? The longer I stay home, the more homeless I look? Just saying, you know. There's a little humor in this world. Maybe we should have a little more. SP Futures down 350, especially if you're long stocks here, for God's sake. SP Futures down 350, NASDAQ Futures down 31. Look at my other Dow down 11 only. Stocks I see moving in the Dow... Goldman Sachs up $1.88, IBM up 72 cents. We've got CRM, Salesforce, one of the new stocks in the Dow, down 99 cents. There's not much going on there. Over in Europe, we have the DAX up 16.1%. We have the FTSE down 17.3%. CAC around down 4, call that flat. Now, obviously, Britain has gone into more of a lockdown. A couple of listeners from UK, and they send me, Lou, you can go to a pub, but only till 10 o'clock. But you can't go see your family.
There is absolutely even less science behind what is happening in Britain than there is here.
It's scary. Nikkei down 258, 1.1%. Shanghai down 56, 1.7%. Hang Seng down 431, 1.8%. These guys are reacting to us. South Korea, maybe Luke can, maybe you can, it says here, South Korea stocks fall as tensions on the peninsula reignite. What the hell is that all about? We'll talk about that after the break. Anyway, I'll go over, unfortunately, the news from yesterday. Dow down 525, that's 1.9%. S&P down 78, 2.4%. NASDAQ down 330, 3%. The only word for that is ouch. Tenure, 0.67, still can't go anywhere. Bund minus 0.52, that's actually going lower. Tenure, Japan back over zero, positive 0.009. That's pretty close to zero. We've got oil up 4 cents, 39.97. Brent up 6 cents, 41.83. Natural gas up 14, 226. Not sure what that is. That's a big move in natural gas. It's almost 7%. RBOB 117 unchanged. Gold down 940, 1859. Again, this is on a 2-month low because the dollar keeps getting stronger and stronger. It's only because the euro keeps getting lower and lower. Silver down 80 cents, 22.30. Copper down 4 cents, 2.94. So much for putting on a big position in FSX because I thought China was coming back. I don't think China's coming back anytime soon here. Lou, I'm starting to get kind of negative on some of these places. Yesterday we'll do that to you, 500 points in the Dow. AV, what do you got for traffic, weather, sports, and our baseball teams suck too.
Good morning, friends. Hope you're all having a great morning. It's warm and nice. Days will continue for a few more days. Mainly sunny today. Might be a few clouds in the afternoon. The highest of the day is 76 and the low is 63. Sounds like a great day to be outside and catch up some sun before the winter hits Chicago. Phoenix, sunny and hot as always. 106 degrees is the highest temperature of the day. Abundant sunshine during the day. 76 at night, clear skies. I think Arizona's pretty steady on this always.
Yep.
Which is good, at least something steady right
yes.
now. And traffic looks all right for this hour. You might also experience some delays on Adams West from I-55 to Roosevelt Road. A minor issue you can see on I-55 this morning is on the ramp. So inbound Dan Ryan, it's down to one lane for the next year. Diamondbacks brought victory to Arizona, winning Rangers 7-3. White Sox and Cubs lost to Pirates 1-2. Cubs lost to Pirates 1-2. And White Sox lost to Indians.
They did. The Cubs and Sox, shall we say, are limping in a little.
2-3.
They both clinched. The Cubs couldn't. You and I are going to be called up and be hitting for the Cubs by the end of the week. I've never seen a team this bad. I watched them last night, and it's about the fifth inning and dozed. I'm so tired of watching people strike out.
It's amazing the offensive power that they had at one point. And I don't know what's going on with Chris Bryant, but it looks like he has. I don't know how he's playing. He seems to be playing in the field fine, but it looks like he has absolutely no enthusiasm for batting at all.
Well, he hasn't played the last two nights because he yanked his shoulder out the other night. But I think he is somehow or another. He's got one of those. You know, some people. It's not like they're weenies or not. The guy sure isn't. But it's they get this. They go from. You got one little injury, and you kind of favor it a little bit, and then you get another one, then you get another one. I think he's one of those dudes.
Well, the one thing I'm sorry about with the report that I just heard is that I don't get to hear AV talk about the Bulls simply because I love the accent with the Bulls. So stay around until basketball picks back up again, and I can listen to that.
Well, at least you're not as bad as Russell. He asked her to say, please read this for me. And he handed her a thing and said, where are Moose and Squirrel? Sounded just like her. You know, she could have been the voiceover.
The line is, big trouble for Moose and Squirrel.
Yes. Mm-hmm. What was her name? Natasha Fatale, right?
Natasha Fatale, that's right. And Boris Badenov.
You know, when you get older, you know, if I mention, what are you, a member of Local 12? Nobody knows what I'm talking about. AV, what's Local 12?
I have no idea.
Well, the unions are all known as locals, right? Well, Local 12 was, Boris Badenov was the head of that union. It was the Villains, Thieves, and Scoundrels Union.
Mm-hmm.
But now they're all in Washington, I think, Lou.
So AV, do you know do you recognize the wordplay on Boris Badenov?
I'm sorry, what?
Do you recognize the wordplay on Boris Badenov? His last name was Boris Badenov, or his last name was Badenov.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. Be recognized broad as good enough?
Now I get it. Well, actually, I never seen this cartoon the first time, so like it, that joke wasn't something new for me, and I'm still like
it
wondering
is.
Why you guys like all like. About
Guy, we like our cartoons. And we like our Three Stooges. What can I say?
Sick.
Lou, you got to move another spot in the room again. Hey, we had the leading up to this Gale Sayers story, and I guess he had all kinds of dementia problems his last year or two. Lou, I was talking to a listener the other night, and some lady who had a big family, or she married into this family, and she was telling me that one of the guys was kind of somewhat of a nut job. He was always a little goofy, and he played, and he wasn't always like that when he was growing up. So he played football for Penn of all places, and when he died, they lobbed his brain off to Boston where they check it out. Evidently, he was all over with this disease. Yeah, and he just played college or high school, obviously, I'm sure. I guess some people, it starts young and it stays. I mean, but Gail had it. Doug Buffon was a good friend from the trading floor. His last couple years were off. I guess when he was on the score, it was last year or so, Lou, he was only on for like an hour after the game. His wife said that he would sit there with legal pads and he would write down like 10 times all the things he wanted to say because he couldn't remember them. And I remember him. Doug was the nicest people I've ever come across. Just the nicest guy. And I've talked, I knew Doug a lot more than Gail. But Gail, I just met at a couple of score functions. And last time I talked to him, he said, well, you know, running's a problem with his knee. He said, but I'm really getting into biking and I'm loving it. And that was probably the last time I talked to him, but obviously he's not biking anymore. But what a nice guy. And, we talk about a talent, huh?
So Sayers was, I saw him play, against the Vikings, obviously. Sayers was one.
Lou, you're breaking up all over. We're missing half the Lou words
here. How any better now?
Yeah.
Okay. So Sayers was a guy. I don't know what's going on with AT&T here this morning. Sayers was a guy, and he steps onto a football field. He changed the nature of the game around him because of his athletic ability. He reminded me, the only guy I've ever seen that ran like him was Barry Sanders, who was another fantastic football talent. But Sanders was playing in an era with where the people around him were much better trained and football was more of a full-time job. Sayers comes in and I just imagine a guy with Barry Sanders' talent in a football league where football is a part-time job.
Yeah.
And watching what he did on the field, his elusiveness, his sense of, you know, what needed to happen in terms of setting up blocks, reading the field in terms of where people were. I've never seen anybody run like that. Sanders was close to it, but Sayers took over a game. And that was true from the minute he stepped on the field as a rookie until he got his his first knee injury.
Allegedly, George Halas saw
a brilliant football player.
Allegedly, George Halas saw one film of him in college. He made some move and he goes, "I've never seen anybody do that. We got to draft him." How much of it do you think was, when I say physical, legs versus peripheral vision? I almost think it was one. I don't know which was more. It seemed like he could see, he could sense people near him. It was almost, what do the ninjas call that? Herring guy or something is a name for it?
Yeah. I think it was a combination of the peripheral vision and incredible body control. I mean, if you look at some of the moves he makes, and again, he's not playing on artificial turf where he's got great footing. He was on natural fields the whole time. If you look at his body control, the way he balances, the way his feet move underneath him, and the speed at with which he did that, he was unparalleled. And so I remember watching a game with him, and at the end of it, there were a couple of guys, and I never understood why Chicago didn't go further. Chicago had a couple of guys that my father, the pro coach, used to tell me to watch in film, and one of them was Dick Butkus, who was one of the most instinctive defensive football players I've ever seen. But Sayers was the other one, And he would, you know, he didn't watch offensive tape that often because he was more worried about the guys on the other side. But every now and then he'd bring a tape home and or a film home, and he'd put it on the projector, and he said, just watch what he does here. And I, you know, you'd see him move, and I'd say, how does he know where, that this guy behind him is reaching for him as he makes this cut? And my father made the comment, he goes, some guys just have this, and you can't coach it. And he was one of them. But he was so far above the people he was playing with. Maybe a contemporary of his in an entirely different kind of style would have been Jim Brown.
Yeah.
But Brown was not the kind of runner Sayers.
No, but he was a lot bigger or heavier.
Yeah, he was power.
Yeah.
Brown was power. Brown was the guy that could take a linebacker head to head and relish the contact. Sayers, the other comment my father made, I seem to recall him making, was look at how he almost never takes a direct hit. You know, he almost never gets, you know, a straight-on shot because his instincts and his reactions are so good that he's making people miss. He's making people just, you know, glancing blows. And again, something totally different in terms of football style.
They all have interesting... The great ones have interesting talent. I asked, you know, Jan was in a training camp with the Bears, so he was in practice with Walter Payton a few times. And I said, Jan, what's like tackling the guy? And he said, Chief, I've never seen anything like it. He's just shifty enough to where you can't go at him. But he's powerful enough that if you're balanced waiting for him to make a move and he hits you, that you're the one, he says, you're always the one taking the blow, never him. He was right in the middle. He goes, and Jan was pretty quick and pretty quick guy. And Jan was bigger than Payton. But he said, you could never, like, just make a move at him because he was fast enough to get around you if you did. But if you stood there waiting for him, he'd bury you. And you had real problems with that too. All these guys have something that other people don't have. And Payton was like a combination of things. Where Sayers would not have been, you know, but Sayers was a lot taller than Payton. Payton was 5'10". Sayers probably, what, 6'2"?
Yeah.
At least. I mean,
yeah.
But I wonder that his style where he would land on his heels and cut so fast, I have a feeling.
Well, you're familiar, I assume, with the concept of ki, the grounding force that pulls you when you're studying something like Aikido or Judo. Where
I never did it, but I understand.
Planting yourself.
But I'm wondering, would he have run out of his own knee on some of the crummy artificial turf fields that were there in the past? Because, I mean, the violence, I mean, a lot of people, when they went to artificial turf, just ran out of their own knees. I mean, he got hit, but I wonder if he would have.
I think he would have put, although, again, you know, he was not a bulky guy.
Yeah.
So you don't have the mass putting the kind of pressure on knees that a lot of other players do. I think his sense of balance and his sense of footwork and his body control probably would have saved him from hurting himself in that kind of a situation. Now, you know, whether his knee might have gotten blown out sooner on artificial turf, I don't know. But I think he would have been just as effective a runner, maybe even more so on artificial turf.
What did
he's not like Sanders or Payton. He's got a much higher center of gravity.
Yeah.
That's what made it even more interesting to me to watch him run.
Yeah, you don't see guys 6'2" usually can move like that.
No, and the only great big running back that I've been, that Brown was a big guy. The other guy that reminded me of that had that kind of upright running style of Brown was Calvin Hill. And of course he, you know, again, my father's comment when Hill came into the league with the Cowboys, he said, he's wonderful to watch, but he can't last. He's running too straight up and he's not avoiding contact. And, you know, you can do that for 2 or 3 years.
Well,
but after those hits start piling up, you start running out of
That's what happened to Jan. That's what happened to Jan Brackington.
Sure.
But one question I have: how many of these guys? I mean, first of all, one comment about George Ellis, which isn't so hot. The Bears won a championship in '63, They draft Butkus, Sayers, Dick Gordon, and some other guy who they let go to the American football, which by any stretch is the best draft in the history of football. 2 years later, and then another year later, they're like the worst team in the league.
I don't understand that.
I mean, they lost. They let Atkins go. They want to pay him. They let Ditka go. They want to pay him. What did Ditka say? He throws nickels around like manhole covers or something like that.
Yeah.
They lost. Johnny Morris went somewhere else. They lost. Bill George got replaced by Butkus. But I mean, everybody they had that was good was gone. Well, the two guys got killed the next year. That hurt. Willie Gallimore and John Farrington in the car crash. But Butkus was. But how do you know? But those two guys. I was there when they retired the number. I'll never forget. It was a Halloween Monday night. It was pouring rain. And they finally decided they were going to retire Butkus and Sayers' numbers. The Bears have more numbers retired than anybody because they've had such great players, obviously, along the way. But, I mean, Halas had trouble keeping it together. He just, he didn't want to pay for it. But football was, when do you think, Lou, I'll make a stab, and then you tell me I'm wrong because you know more about this than me. I'm going to say that the first teams that could compete, they wouldn't win. Which with today's teams would be in the 70s, it went from a part-time job to a full-time job. And I'm going to say the late 70s Pittsburgh teams were probably the earliest team that would be considered modern football. Is that fair?
So the money starts ramping up in the mid-70s. I would say that you see the transition to where the teams began to expect the players to show up. Probably late 70s.
Before that, there was 6 exhibition games, right? Just to get these guys in shape.
Well, yeah. I mean, training camp was designed literally to condition these guys to playing football and getting their wind back and everything else, because they simply, they weren't doing it full time. They weren't working out full time, and I mean, there was a school of thought in the 60s and into the 70s that weight training was bad. Heavy weight training was bad for football players because it restricted their movement and made them clumsy. Imagine that.
Well, one of the first guys, my uncle used to tell me, one of the first guys who really got into weight training and extended his career because he just was put in the Hall of Fame 4 years ago. He retired from the Bears, but I don't think that's where most of his career was Stan Jones. Remember that name?
Vaguely, yeah.
But he said he used to have to go like to the park district and lift because there was no weights in the. But I mean, I know guys who tell me that the NFL. I mean, my uncle played 12 years of pro ball in the Depression. There were all kinds of leagues. The NFL was just one of them. It might have been the best, but it really wasn't even the best till Halas signed Red Grange. That's what set them apart.
Yep, exactly.
But even that, I always put in the same class. You'll wonder why. I put him in the same class as Howard Stern. You're going to say this chief is really going off the runway today
because they were pioneers.
Because they were signed to contracts that the owners couldn't possibly pay. They had actually make the money to get themselves paid. I mean, they signed Red Grange. They said, okay, we're going to pay you whatever the number was. 50 grand a year wasn't that much, probably. I'm sure it wasn't anywhere near that much. But Red Grange had to go barnstorm. He had to play sometimes 2-3 games a week just in front of crowds just so he could essentially make his salary. Like, there's no way if Howard Stern was a clunk on Sirius Radio that he was going to get paid that much. He had to make that money to get paid. Right?
Right. And yeah, okay. So I see that connection and that analogy.
It's like if you get you're a big time attorney. If you're Jim Thompson, who just died, and you're a rainmaker, they bring you into some firm and they say, "Lou, we're going to make you $1 million a year." The only way they're going to pay you that is if you bring in $3 million worth of business.
Right. Yeah, I've had that. I've seen that play out.
Yeah.
So now you've caused me to do a free association. The latest guy I think of that's jumped like that is Joe Rogan, who Spotify puts in at some incredible contract. I can't remember what it was, $100 million or something like that. So he comes into Spotify and starts pulling in huge numbers because of his podcast. and his video show. So Spotify gets that, and then this is classic. Spotify staff immediately starts trying to undermine him and get him censored because he's the thing that makes him so attractive to Spotify initially drives these people crazy, which is basically that he's unfiltered. He will bring in people who, from a wide variety of political bents and political positions and all over the place. He is, I think, politically liberal, but kind of socially conservative. And a bunch of the people on Spotify staff are saying, we don't want to work with this guy. He makes us feel unsafe. And I'm going, you just signed this guy to a $100 million contract. Are you guys nuts? You're going to blow that up after you've got him on a contract that pays him $100 million? I don't understand why those people aren't fired immediately.
Well, that's what's going down now. In the same vein, Lou, I want to ask you a real quick question about the market, but I'll save that for a minute. What do you make of the $700,000 fine for the two people in the NFL that have already had the COVID and don't really need to wear a mask? Are the people who've had the COVID?
I think it's ridiculous.
Well, we're up to like 40, 50 million people, right, that have had it already. So is there ever going to be a carve out for those people? There's a lady in the office that's across from me who got it because her husband, anyway, she got it. And she's antibodies. They want to, buy her antibodies and all kinds of stuff. Why does she have to wear a mask, Lou? Why can't she wear like a, something around her head and say, already had it or something?
Well, it's none of this. None of this now is based on science. I mean, the pandemic is over. Okay, the numbers, the hospitalizations and deaths from the disease have dropped to levels that are almost infinitesimal. I'm sure you saw the CDC numbers that came out the other day. If you're under age 70, I think it is, the chances of you getting really sick from this thing are far less than 1%.
Yep.
And the short answer is most of that, the herd has been culled. So the pandemic is effectively over. You have lots of new cases, but hospitalizations and death rates are going way down.
Lou,
what are we doing?
Well, I got a flash. Let me, question that I've asked everybody, almost everybody on here, I will ask you, maybe I already did. What is with the news situation? I've got people, as you know, people send me everything. And when people send you stuff, and we go back and forth, and I think we've learned a lot from each other. I got a thing the other day, Southside, regarding the mutation, the main mutation that the virus has had, where it's got one spiky thing on it or something. And now the idea is that it's made it more contagious, but less deadly. And I just get this thing yesterday, and it's, I don't know if it's CDC or some high-end place. Lou, I got the exact same piece of paper from an Italian doctor, I'm going to say mid-May, saying, I don't know what's happening. More people are getting it, but nobody's dying. I don't put people in a hospital. He goes, it's this mutation, and he had the same thing. He goes, there's a spiky thing on this thing. This mutation seems to have made it more contagious and less deadly. Why is it friggin' damn near October? And we're just getting that, unless I just happen to have this, I don't remember who sent it to me. It's 6 month old news, Lou.
Well, you saw some of this in the press conference, I believe it was with Scott Atlas yesterday, the doctor from Stanford who the president put on his staff, who basically reiterated what he's been saying since May, which is this thing is not as dangerous now as we thought it was, and the short answer is there appears to be a significant amount of immunity in the population that is depressed already without any contamination. That is depressing it. These viruses mutate, and this one will eventually, if it's like every other virus we've seen, is going to burn itself out. And that was being said at the end of April, beginning of May, and he just reiterated it yesterday. And the press was treating it like this was some revelation. And I'm going, you guys haven't been reading the memos.
This
word has been out there for some time.
Is that Atlas guy? Is he like the grandson of Charles Atlas?
I just thought this was a great name for a doctor, Scott Atlas. He's I believe his field originally was radiology, but he's been on public health policy issues for Stanford for a long time, and he's a numbers cruncher, so he understands how the numbers work, and he's been saying, along with the other people that I referenced back in the spring, he's been saying, you know, look, the infection rates on these things don't look like we have to get to 60 or 70% of the population with the disease. It looks like there is a significant level of immunity that means our infection rate only needs to get to like 50 to 20% before this thing stops replicating. So he's been saying that for a while.
What next week, let's talk about the potential Supreme Court candidates. I don't believe that he's going to go with the Cuban lady in Florida.
She's just, I think she's too new. I mean, she just doesn't have much of as much experience. I'm hoping it's Barrett, because I had the pleasure of appearing in front of her, and that means that I've been in front of two of the, if she gets nominated and confirmed, it would mean I've appeared in front of two Supreme Court justices.
Because we always knew you were special.
I argued in front of Justice Gorsuch a few years ago.
Was this when you were Herman Rabb in the in JAG?
I'm sorry?
Is this when you were playing Herman Rabb in JAG, when you were JAG?
No. No, this is when I was acting as in my civilian capacity, arguing employment and trade secret cases.
I will tell you this, Lou, as a I won't say very much practicing Catholic, but as a Catholic my whole life, I've come across some of these splinter groups a few times. They make me real nervous. I'm not saying anything bad about her. I'm saying that I don't know anything about that particular one, but they make me real nervous. It's real strange.
Well, it's not Opus Dei, so.
I know. I went to one of these days, I'll talk about it on the air. I went to a funeral for a guy in Opus Dei. Luda has, out of my 60 plus years, I'm going to say that was one of the oddest days of my life. It was really out there. The guy giving the homily, first of all, there were, what do you call the guys that are not like you? We were heretics in the midst. That was us. We went to the funeral. I'm sitting there minding my own business it wasn't church, it was in somebody's house. I was the heretic in the midst. And the whole thing was about this guy. We didn't really care if he croaked. It had to do with we've lost one fight against the heretics, and they kept looking at like me and the people I brought up. This was just a buddy of mine from college, his dad. There I go for being Irish and actually going to somebody's wake or at her funeral. That'll never happen again. It was weird. Anyway, I'll give you the whole story someday. We got a dash, but I'll talk at you next week.
Talk to you.
SP Futures now down 15. NASDAQ Futures on 88. Really don't need another day like yesterday. Be right back, Mr. Dan Genius. Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you are aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and try to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
There's something happening here. What it is.
Hello, and welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howell. She's AV on the board. Finished up with Mr. Lou Michaels. S&P futures down 17. NASDAQ futures down 104. This is not good. We also have Mr. Dan Janitas with us from Kratos Capital. All right, Dan, find us something to buy here, bud. I dare you.
Sure. Yeah, it's been a tough period here. I think we're going to continue to see a lot of volatility. One of the names I mentioned before, Global Self Storage, SELF, has actually held in really nicely here. So there are times when owning something that doesn't have a whole lot of liquidity can help your portfolio. And there's not necessarily nothing that's going on in the news is really going to impact this company. Their business will continue to stay afloat regardless of what we see in the next, at least in the near term, the next few months.
Dan, have we reached the... It's only been, well... We've had a few down days, but we came back Monday, Tuesday, but now yesterday not so good. Are we kind of reaching the point where if you're an Apple holder or a Google holder or something, you're just going to be victimized by, people sell the ETFs. If you sell the Qs, you're selling 40% of those stocks.
Absolutely.
Do you think we're there yet, or we're close to getting there?
I think part of what's happening is just there's more uncertainty that's building as we get closer to the election. And there's also, the market has had a really nice run. So regardless of which market you've been in, right now it is hard to find value. I mean, everything has run up so quickly. So this volatility, the period of volatility we're in is likely to continue. That's one thing that I could promise. So, if people are dumping, and they're dumping across the board, it doesn't seem like there's any particular areas that they're leaving out. And, that includes fixed income, which really hasn't been all that exciting. But we have seen a little bit of a sell-off over the past week in high yield. So high yield bonds had, the spreads had tightened significantly. We were having a hard time finding value, so we stepped aside. We let a couple of our bonds mature, and we're sitting on some cash now. And this probably isn't a bad time to sit on a little cash and to wait for those opportunities. In terms of ideas, we're kind of shifting gears a little bit because we don't really want to continue to chase yield. So we have, although we've had some energy names in our portfolio, we also are looking at some names that have focused on energy efficiency. And one company that I've met with recently and the management team is Ameresco. They do it's a ticker symbol AMRC, and they're a small cap company. They basically are hired to improve the energy efficiency of airports, colleges, government, healthcare, hospitals. They originally started out doing wind and solar, but they've moved into other areas of renewable energy, and they do analytics as well to measure basically the cost savings and the energy use. So it's a business that we have not really participated in a big way. And part of the problem is the cost in this sector, and how quickly things are going to change. But this is a company, however, that is well managed, that has been doing this for years and years, that seems to shift with, you know, as the demand picks up. My question to these guys when we first talked is, you know, municipalities are having a lot of issues financially. How can you assure there's going to be more spending in this area? And what they're saying is the spending is there because people are trying to save money. So this is a sector, I think, or a part of the market, if you haven't been involved, that it could be a good time to step in. We don't know what's going to happen in terms of, the new administration or the current administration staying. But either way, we're moving in this direction. Another company that I may have mentioned before is Energy Focus, ticker symbol EFOI. And this is another company where we've met management several times. LED lighting was their big thing and still is their big thing. And they're now moving towards, you know, in a similar manner to Ameresco, their main objective is to provide more efficient energy use, more efficient lighting, and they're moving into some new lighting products that will, be what they call human-centric. In other words, as the day goes on in your house, the lighting is going to dim, and as you get up in the morning, you're going to have higher, the lighting is going to be more tuned to your lifestyle, if you will, or your daily life, so that you'll be able to sleep better and all that. So they've been moving into some areas, you know, innovative areas outside of LED lighting, but their main product, LED lighting, is still very popular and it's growing. So here these are a couple names in a sector that if you have not been involved, as we haven't, that we've stepped into recently, and we've noticed that they've traded pretty well. They've done fairly well in over the last few weeks relative to the market. Again, good management teams really make a difference, and I think these are two companies that have a long future and a lot of growth in front of them.
What there's a lot of different kinds of sell-offs, Dan. There's some that, you know, the reason why some that haven't gone down is people just haven't looked at them yet.
Exactly.
I hope we're not entering one of those. I'm a little bit more of a conspiracy theorist than you. It is interesting to me that when you have energy efficiency, that I think people, you know, whether it should be going faster or slower or whatever, I mean, who the hell knows what that debate is, but, I mean, the bottom line is, based on 20 years ago, we're incredibly more efficient just about everywhere.
Yeah.
I think. And the price of the people's bills or the energy to create the electricity is probably down or certainly not up. And yet everybody's bills are up. I mean, I don't like to wander you off into a political area. When are we going to say to Commonwealth Edison, you don't get to make $40 billion a year? Lay off. I mean, it doesn't seem that's our utility, by the way. I mean, I use way less power than I did 20 years ago. My bill's higher. I mean,
And that's a little bit of a different, you know, what you're talking about is a little bit of a different issue when it comes to, you know, it's more driven by utilities. What I'm talking about more are companies that are making money by providing product,
right.
that is more. But I would agree with you. No, I would agree with you that I think that the monopoly in that industry is going to be an issue. I would not necessarily be running into running towards utilities. I think that there's going to be some challenges in that. In those areas, as there have been with several major utilities, you know, in the past decade when we've had, I mean, look at PG&E, in the past decade where we've had, a really nice run in the economy and a lot of growth in the economy, a lot of these utilities are still having problems. And some of it, I believe, is also poor management and poor execution. So charging higher prices isn't always necessarily the way to improve business. And energy alternatives, I think, are going to provide, alternatives to your current, and the same thing with cable, if you will. You know, the same thing with, you know, you need to have an alternative service that will get people excited. And you know, some of the, two of the companies I mentioned, I think maybe are going to help provide support to some of these alternative services.
What where do you see? I mean, we've got the elections. In some ways, it's too close. In some ways, it's not far enough away. Right.
Right.
Is there any semblance of common sense anywhere? Anything can happen between now and November. I mean, I don't.
I think it's hard to. And I try to make sense of this all the time. That we what we hear and what we see and what we hear in the media seem to be quite different. So I go back to the old mosaic theory of just sort of observing what's going on around me. And I just got back from New England, where I was for the past week, and I'd been hearing that, oh, you know, everything's slowed down, everybody in New England is, you know, staying home and all that. Well, nobody's staying home there, I'll tell you that much. You know, the restaurants were crowded, the roads were very crowded. So there's a lot of activity going on out there, and I think, you know, people have had a lot of cash, and you can see it in the way the market is run up, and you can also see it if you just get out there and look around, that most people are moving on and businesses are moving forward. So in terms of, you know, where it's going to be, I think there's still a lot of, you know, there's a tremendous amount of uncertainty, and we're trying to figure that out. You know, as money managers, we're trying to get a sense of what will happen if we have a new administration and all that. I think we should pay maybe less attention to that and more attention to what's going on with issues like, you know, lack of stimulus, you know, which doesn't seem to have been a huge issue. I know the media is saying that it was a big issue, but it seems like it should have been a bigger issue and the market should have responded even more. I think we need to look at what's going on with rates. I think we need to look at what's going on overseas. You know, we still have big issues with China. There's still big issues in the energy sector with Russia and the Saudis, and those are still big uncertainties. So regardless of the new administration, I think we still have we have a lot on our plate, and I think that's going to continue to add to this, you know, this volatility and uncertainty in the next few months. And I think another way to word it is we probably see less upside in the market here because a lot of the good news is already built in. But the upside that I'm starting to see, and I'm hopeful for, is that people are getting out. Businesses are not only opening, but they're thriving in this environment. They're moving forward. And although a lot of the mom and pops are still struggling, a lot of the large businesses have benefited in this environment. So you're right. There's a lot of confusing messages out there, and we're still trying to make sense of it.
Well, what? I guess you just came back from Massachusetts, and that's you can get conflicting views of the world even downtown in some of the suburbs here. I've mentioned this to you every week, that my view of the world sitting in downtown Chicago is a very somber one. And it honestly can't be anything else. I mean, there's a little bar downstairs, one of the few places that are open, and last night everybody had a bunch of stuff to do. We usually go stop in on Wednesday. I'm getting texts from the waitress. Where are you guys?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. Literally. I mean, it's that bad. And it's, you know, we're in a situation where I don't even have a, when you talk about we need some stimulus, and yesterday, you know, the congressman and everybody were talking about stimulus. Dan, I wonder, I don't know, maybe they got a campaign all day or they got to do something up. They should spend a day, you know, where you and I sit and just get these numbers come across your desk and look at them. Do they have any idea how screwed up this is? I mean, they've already, I'll use the term pissed away, spent 3 years of taxes. And I mean, where am I wrong here? That we?
No, I totally agree. Yeah, no, you're not. And I think you're exactly right. There are a lot of people talking about things that they really have no idea. They have no idea. So there's, you know, we're looking at the numbers and we're getting confused. And like I said, I'm also going out and looking at what's going on around me and getting very confused as well, because it doesn't seem to necessarily add up. And there is a lot of talk about what's happening from different points of view, and it's, you know, the only way I think to get a sense of that isn't necessarily to read or listen to the TV, which we all do, but I think a lot of it is to get out there and see for yourself.
Well, it's
when we meet with companies, one thing that really has helped me a lot during these last 6 months is we have frequent, you know, almost daily discussions with management, and those have helped tremendously in terms of knowing what's really going on at their level. So whether that's what's going on with the plant in China, or whether it's what's going on with demand that they're seeing, or whether it's what's going on with, you know, with some new products or services that they're looking at. And most companies that we talk to are operating very well in this environment.
They have found
a way. And so that, to me, is the hope. I think if we're looking for, in the investment world, if we're looking for good ideas and we want a little bit of confidence, these companies are doing well, and they've adapted very well to the new environment, and they're looking for opportunities, and people are making money. So I don't think the world is quite as doom and gloom as what you're seeing in downtown Chicago.
I sure hope not.
I intentionally avoided downtown Boston. I was spent some time with friends and family up in Maine and New Hampshire and on the Cape, and that's where a lot of people were. There were hour-long waits to get in restaurants and places like that. So I think people are tired of this. Everybody wants to move on. It's being reflected, I think, in companies, and I think it's being reflected at the household and the individual level as well.
Dan, I'm going to ask you, I think, a pretty serious question. And a guy like you, I've never met you personally, but I'm on the air with you, and you're not the kind of guy I would want to lie to, because you seem like a pretty darn good guy. And yet, when you go to a place, when you say, by the way, I'm with you on the American part. If anybody has got, you know, some chutzpah in terms of blowing with the wind, it's medium and small kinds, you know, companies. Most of those people run those places are like me and you. They've had to reinvent themselves 10 times along the way, and they hate doing it, but they're good at it. Unfortunately, right?
Right. Yeah.
But
absolutely.
But I mean, you're also, I think, you are smart enough to be aware that the last thing is going to happen when you walk in and sit down from a guy, you know, could be PTI Securities, for God's sake. Jeez, Dan, business sucks. Our biggest two clients just called up and said, screw you guys. I mean, nobody's ever going to tell you that either. How do you, I mean, it's like watching CNBC, where not one of the people who make money, by you sending them money and them charging you 1.5% a year, not one of those people is ever going to say, God, the world looks so bad. What you should do is call me up and ask for a check. An asteroid could be, you know, going toward your head, and they won't tell you that. I mean, are these people, I mean, really credible with you? I mean, you're a hard guy to lie to. I'll give you that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I guess what I say is this is where experience comes in. So, you know, 35 years of experience of meeting one-on-one with senior management, you know, going back to my days at Loomis as a high-yield bond portfolio manager, but literally having daily meetings when there were road shows, and being with, if you will, my training was sitting with some of the top managers at other firms in Boston, and everyone, you know, being pretty tough with the management teams in terms of the questions. So I ask a lot of really tough questions. You know, I think part of getting management to talk is to get them to relax as well, and then you find out what's really going on. Of course, they're going to paint things in the best light, but I think through, you know, having 35 years of experience doing this will help you sort of read through what's really going on. The biggest problem for us and what we avoid is companies who are not willing to share what's going on, the good and the bad. So if we sense that there's a, if there's a gatekeeper, or if there's somebody who's not willing to tell the whole story, or if they're talking in generalizations rather than specifics, then we get concerned. If we're able to get, most of the time the companies are going to respond in specifics, and even if the specifics aren't good. So we know the questions to ask. And the questions to ask aren't usually the obvious ones that most analysts are asking. Questions that we ask have to do a lot with management and the culture and the, you know, you're looking at the employees. You want to see whether the company now is thinking about letting people go, or whether they're, you know, how are they incentivizing their people? How are they keeping the morale up? So that we ask a number of different questions that aren't really on the list, if you will, for most, you know, say sell side analysts who are really just looking to update you know, quarterly earnings and update whatever's happened in the past quarter, and then also get the information for their projections. We're trying to get in to know what's going on day to day, and we want to know what the vision is of the senior management team. So our approach is a little different, and we can cut through a lot of the BS. In fact, when I start getting that, I stop the conversation instantly and shift the gears. So I think I would say, just from experience, I can read through a lot of that. And we expect people to put on their, you know, the best face when we're meeting with them.
What do you sense?
It's just knowing what questions to ask and knowing how to steer the conversation.
If there's a spot in on a scale of 1 to 10 companies, I mean, you've already mentioned that, you know, the Amazons in the world seem to have come out smelling like a rose. And guys who own a saloon probably are out of business, so they'd be a 1 and Amazon's a 10. Seems to me like you're in that 6.5, 7 range. Where do you think the big problems start? I mean, where people are just, they're not coming back. I mean, is it in the 5 or the 4? I mean, Kevin talks about the distribution systems in Indiana and Michigan, which is taking a lot of that off from Chicago in this area. They're doing real well with all the, you know, because everybody's getting stuff delivered and everything else. I mean, they're hiring. There's a lot of places that are, quote, hiring.
Absolutely. And in fact, one of the other things I was going to say in terms of this visit is I have a lot of friends who own businesses and talking to them, and they're having trouble hiring in certain industries. So you're talking about, like you're saying, the pub we went to a pub. I went with my friends to a pub up in New Hampshire, and we had to wait. Part of the reason we had to wait so long is that there wasn't enough staff. Now, whether that's COVID related or whether it's just, you know, they can't find enough people right now, I'm not sure, but I think if people were really that desperate for work, they would, you know, they wouldn't be having those issues. So where it breaks out, I think, is depends on the industry, and we always believe it depends on the management team, but I think certain industries, obviously, hospitality, restaurants, some parts of the energy sector, you know, some parts of the engines are going to have trouble, and those are going to be the 4s and the 5s, and what'll make them work, I think, is a good management team.
Well,
so being in an industry that's lagging, but if you've got a good management team, that's going to put you over. Being in, you know, you can be in a 6 or a 7, but have a poor management team, and that'll drop you down at the 4 and 5 level, if that makes sense.
Well, you're trivial, but you're also, you know, I don't know, the idea here with the people not getting people for work, it's, I don't know. I mean, I know I have so many people that are out of work. But, and what I'm sensing here, Dan, is that the government, I think, did a pretty good job when they thought, to be honest with you, as scary as it may seem for me, early on when this was going to be a massive problem, everybody thought, you know, there'd be bodies stacked up outside of emergency rooms, they pretty much covered everybody for, you know, 75 days. In 90 days, and now there hasn't been any coverage. I mean, I see that, you know, if you look under the sheets right now, you might see the place going out of business becoming almost geometric compared to March and June, because it's been a long time since everybody who, there's all kinds of different levels of people who got this fiscal stuff. There was people who were going to be able to pay their people anyway, but participated in the loans because they were there, right? I mean, a lot of people like that. Now, those people, I mean, business is probably still not the best, but it's still somewhat okay. They're limping along, and they got a little help from government, but they haven't got any help since June. So then there's other places that really, I'll say, you know, the people were laid off, and they continued to pay them, and then as soon as the money stopped, they're still paying people, and they still don't have any business back. So those guys right about now got to be gagging, I mean, I'm thinking. So there's all kinds of levels here, and I certainly appreciate the fact that you guys find people that aren't necessarily household names that are managing to hang in there. I just wonder, at what point are people falling off? Even people who think they're not affected, are they going to be affected? I mean, if we're, and I don't see how they come up with another $3 trillion without just printing it, and I don't know what that does to everybody. And I really don't
know. I think a lot of it goes back to the virus too. I mean to the vaccine for the virus. If you know the we know. I mean, I think another, you know, sort of, a positive factor here is that we know that the companies are getting closer and closer. You know, we're seeing third stage trials and with a number of companies. So we're very likely to see a vaccine. I'm seeing, again, just sort of from observation, that there are more people going out to those businesses that have been hurt. You know, and it is, maybe it is a question of the winners and the losers. you know, when you have a tough economic environment, it generally, there's still going to be a demand for people to go to pubs and restaurants, for example. So the ones that have managed their staff well and have chosen the right people and have the right product and the right food and the right environment, they're going to do okay. They're going to weather this downturn because you're going to have people waiting in line. And the others that maybe started recently or started a while ago but didn't keep up with the times, they're going to go out of business. So there will be the winners and the losers are going to come, come to fruition here in the near term. Some of those businesses, maybe there were just too many of these businesses, if you will, and this is going to allow some, you know, the strongest survive, if you will, or the ones that have done their homework survive, or the ones that are, you know, have the right recipe, the right management team, the right staff. And I think that goes for your household, you know, your pub down the street, and I think it also goes for larger companies and the, you know, smallish companies that we invest in.
We only have a minute left. What's the dictatorial mantra in Massachusetts and how many people you can have in a place?
Well, that's what I'm saying. That, you know, what the governor is saying there is quite different than what I saw. I mean, what I was told is that restaurants weren't supposed to be open. People weren't supposed to be inside gyms, and I went to three different gyms where people weren't wearing masks. So I don't know, you know, what you're hearing. You know, I went to a hotel, I stayed at a hotel where it said Governor Baker says blah, blah, blah. But then I go in and the staff weren't wearing masks. So the places were full. You know, there were, like I said, in up in New Hampshire and in Maine, there were lines on the Cape that I don't think I ever seen the traffic that bad going, driving around the back roads of the Cape, going into a grocery store that, you know, I mean, it was, you know, every single car, you know, every single parking spot was taken. So I think what you're hearing and what you're seeing, you got to get out there and experience it.
Well, yeah, everybody
from me. That's part of the, you know, the theory about the mosaic theory is seeing, yeah, there were some businesses that didn't look open, but there were plenty that were thriving. People want things to get better.
Oh, I agree.
You know, people want to see everything thrive and they want to see everyone healthy. So I think the vast majority, I think that, and my belief is that's what's going to win out here.
Well, Chicago, they're 25%. And if you have an outdoors, you're lucky. You didn't even know you had one. If you can find a spot, you're okay.
Sure.
Now, suburbs, they don't care if you throw a tent in the middle of the highway; they want you open.
But
the city, the city's running around giving people $2,500 fines. They give a $2,500 fine to the club across the street from us downtown because the people waiting on the sidewalk weren't 6 feet apart. So the paranoia from dictator Lori is nothing like you saw in Massachusetts.
Yeah, I didn't really see that at all. And I actually, the rental car I had Florida plates on it. And at first I was a little concerned. And then, I mean, no issue at all. I don't see like a huge amount of enforcement. I actually think people here in Florida, where we don't have the mandates, are tending to follow things a little bit more, if anything, and just because of the age of the population. But
yep.
But people are, you know, people want to get back. You know, the weather's nice up there. People want to get outside. You know, businesses, I didn't see that sort of doom and gloom, but maybe I chose to be in the places where I wasn't going to find that.
I wish I was on the Cape right now. I'll tell you, hey, what? Give us a shameless plug and then we'll talk to you next week.
Kratos Capital, if you're looking for, it's good time to have, money management, kratoscapital.com.
Thank you. Good stuff as usual. Have a nice time. SP Futures down 18, NASDAQ Futures down 118.
Thanks.
Can't seem
Bye.
To turn this bus around. Be right back, we have Frank Fahey.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control. Right here.
Well, and we're back to Stocks and Jocks. I don't know. She's AV on the board. She's AV anywhere, but right now she's on the board. S&P futures down 24, and NASDAQ is down 134. This carnage just keeps getting worse here. By the moment, we haven't started the day yet, for God's sake. S&P, yes, I'll get to the, here we go. I'll refresh everything. Every time I refresh something, we're down lower here. This is not good. We've got Dow's down 81. Individual stocks in the Dow. We've got a couple that are up. We've got Johnson & Johnson up as they look like they're coming close to one of the first people with the vaccine. Anyway, Dow's down 81. Over in Europe, we've got, the Dow's got to be down more than 81, but it just happened like a second ago. Over in Europe, we've got the DAX down 7 points. Let's call that flat. FTSE down 28.5% now. They were down 3 a minute ago. CAC down 10. That's 0.2%. Again, those guys are leaking a little bit, but not like they, it's not horrible yet. Nikkei down 258, 1.1%. Shanghai down 56, 1.7%. Hang Seng down 431. That's 1.8. So pretty heavy sell-offs over there. Again, yesterday, you don't want to really remember, but I'll make you remember. Dow Jones down 525. That's 1.9%. S&P down 78. That's 2.4%. NASDAQ down 330. That's 3%. So it's starting. This is getting real. 10-year 0.66. It's down another 1 basis point. Bund minus 0.52. Japan positive 0.009. We've got oil down 6 cents at 39.87. Brent down 2 cents, 41.75. Natural gas up 8 cents, 220. RBOB is 117. We got gold is down $6 at 18.61. A long way from 2000 now. Silver down 72 cents, 22.38. Copper getting whacked pretty good here, down 4 cents, 294. So much for the industrial metals hanging in there. I don't think they're not a good sign if you're an industry sort of dude. AV, what do you guys, traffic, weather, sports? Sox and Cubs, Sox.
Good morning, friends. If you're in Chicago, I hope you have a chance to appreciate this beautiful sunny morning before the winter hits us. It's mainly sunny today, a few clouds. In the afternoon, 76 degrees is the highest temperature of the day and 63 at night. Sounds like a great day to be outside. The temperature will peak in the low mid 80s on Saturday before the cold front cool temperature down a bit for Sunday. Traffic looks all right for this hour. A minor issue you can see on I-55 this morning on the ramp into inbound Denver. It's down to one lane for the next year. It's a slow go on the 3-state northbound from 95th, a crash just before the 83rd Street toll plaza causes a backup that starts at 127. And Arizona's Diamondbacks brought victory, winning Rangers 7-3. Cubs lost to Pirates 1-2, and White Sox to Indians 2-3.
So the Cubs can't beat the Pirates, are the worst team in baseball.
Well, it's not their year, probably.
They're in first place. It's supposed to be their year. They're gonna make. They're in the playoffs, and they don't. They're looking lousy. Do we have Frank?
Yes, we do.
Frank, how are you, bud?
Doesn't take long for a Cubs fan to lose faith. Win once, and
well, all you have to do is watch them try and bat, and it's absolutely disgusting. They strike out like 10. They get 5 hits a night, and they strike out 12, 13 times. It's like watching Little League.
The White Sox game was good last night.
They lost, too. Their big star came.
Yeah, but it was a good game. Both Giolito and Bieber were they're great pitchers.
I think the Sox got a way better chance than the Cubs at this point. They have much
better pitching.
Yeah.
Across the board. I mean, Darvish, gosh, he's everything you hope for right now, but...
Well, it'll be interesting, these three-game series. I mean, even the Cubs, as crummy as they are, I mean, you throw Darvish, Hendrick, and Lester at somebody, those are three pretty formidable people. I mean, they could all get...
Yeah, they are. I think the White Sox may have a bit better relief core.
Very possible. But if you're looking at, if you're in your relief core that much, in a three-game series, you probably got trouble. Especially the Cubs, because they can't score.
Right, I'm worried about Luis Robert right now, so hopefully he'll start hitting again.
Well, there's supposed to be 100 games left in the season at this point, where they have plenty of time to come out of a slump, and now all of a sudden I think these guys are all panicking. I mean, what do you mean? It's over. I gotta be out of the slump by next week. How do I do that? Swing harder, right? Like golf. How do you make up for the last hole? Swing harder. That always works. Just saying.
And nothing works at golf for me. The only time I've ever broken 100 is swinging with my back to the hole. And the rest of the foursome says, we'll never play golf with you again, Frank. But I'll shoot in the low 90s when I do it.
Your bosom buddy Greg drags me to this sheriff's outing. He goes up to this par 3 and he whacks his ball. And I go, what are you doing? He goes, what do you mean? I'm going to hit another one. Greg, you're hitting the ball the wrong way. The hole's over there. Oh. I don't think I've ever seen that in all my years of golf, but anyway, not his game, not mine anymore either, but all right, we got to talk about the market, Frank. We're down another 26 after being down, let's see, what were we down yesterday, 78. This is starting to get real. I continue to have people talk to me either by calling or by reference. They're all getting nervous. Nobody's making a move. It's hard to tell people to buy puts now. The puts are so high. And the VIX is up to, where are we this morning? We're up to over 30. So unless you have, you know, have someone, plus it's very difficult even if somebody has I know for us, we're getting, you know, new clients pretty rapid pace, but yeah, Frank, if somebody says they want to be, if you're at a Merrill Lynch or someplace and you want to change, it's a couple of weeks to get out of there. You got all this stock with Big Cap Mike and, or Big Cap Bob and Mid Cap Mike, and they got, you probably got a couple of, their own portfolios that they won't let switch. I mean, they tie you together pretty good at some of these places, and I look at some of these stocks, and I don't see how they can't go down like a whole lot more. I mean, I don't see the energy patch going down much more or anything like that. But some of these new ones, man, are 10, 11 times sales. I mean, that's where things got in 2000 before we had a problem. But right now, it doesn't look like anybody likes anything. Even though they don't like the metals, they don't like oil. I mean, name me something people like here. Nobody, they don't like bonds. We don't like no stinking bonds. I mean, it's crazy.
Yet we're still up 33% from the low for this year.
Yeah. Well,
which I think reinforces exactly what you say. You know, at a certain point, you take a big, deep breath and you go, wait a minute, what is going on around here?
Well, the amount of money, it's a part of this. As you know, my educational background, I mean, when I came out of grad school, the mantra at the time was, you know, if the chairman of the corporation gets, you know, had a bad tummy and was in the can, the stock would be down, you know, half a buck type of thing. The news traveled that fast and the market was such an efficient pricer of things. I don't know how to market prices stuff. I mean, in terms of degree, when the Fed becomes a main player.
Fed, and there's also a very limited pool of players. You know, it's not just one guy at Merrill Lynch or J.P. Morgan. It gets out of whack, and we see what happens when you have that article about J.P. Morgan being fined $1 billion on the precious metals side. With fewer players, it's easier to manipulate a market or a stock or an asset of any sort.
When I was we had to take a course at the University of Chicago, Frank, and then you had to take your usual stuff that you had to grind through and hate the hell out of. I was fortunate in that I could take 11 electives because I passed out of my economics stuff, which only meant I took harder stuff in the economics school, but at least I didn't have to just sit there and grind through accounting and finance all day long. But one of the courses you had to take was like a, I won't exactly call it a behavioral science thing, but it was how some of the stuff you were using could be used in other areas. How could your math be used? We got this guy who was he was very multidimensional, shall we say, and he was doing some work for hospitals and trying to use linear regression to figure out a hospital, you know, to have a very, very similar to, do you remember, what was his name, Fran Finnegan?
Yes.
Fran was a guy, talk about stocks and jocks, Fran was a guy who loved sports, was a smaller guy, so he just loved them. But he loved to play football, but he played like one play on our dorm team and broke his ankle, so it was not good. But Fran was a nice guy. He was like a year or two older than me, but he was a computer guy before there were computer guys. And he ended up, he'd have all these pack of computer cards, he'd run down to where we had to put them in the engineering building or someplace, where they had like one machine and you have to wait your turn in the middle of the night to get through. Anyway, but he was one of the first guy who put together the statistics for football teams. In other words, when you're recruiting people,
mm-hmm.
he would say, because up until then it would be you call your friend, you know, Mortimer Fahey, and he's a high school coach in California. I got this guy, Chief. He's a hell of a halfback. You know, and based on that kind of stuff, maybe you'd get a film, maybe you wouldn't. But there really was nothing to compare. So Fran put together a list of, well, at least we want to know what's the time in the 40, how big are they, how much can they, I forget what even the 10 things were. I don't even know jumping was part of it or whatever. But at least then you could sort of compare one person to another other than, God, this guy's great type of thing, or he sucks. And he sold.
He also had people go out and weigh them and see how tall they were.
Yes.
Once he refined it a bit more. He didn't trust coaches to do it.
Well, duh.
Duh.
Well, but Notre Dame, actually, when he was there, got rid of their computer major. I don't know if you knew that or not. You were there, so you probably.
I was in grad school there, but I have a minor in computer science from back in the day.
But they canned it for like a year, and then they say, well, that's not the direction the world is going, and didn't got it.
Oh, it was too vocational. That was the argument. It wasn't academic enough.
So anyway, when he graduates, he sells the thing to Hank Stram for like $20,000. And we're talking an era when the tuition was $3,500. So $20,000 was big dough in 1974. And I think he ended up, anyway, what I'm saying was he used some sort of metrics. He was an earlier guy. And then this behavioral science professor tried to do the same thing in hospitals. And comparing care in hospitals is actually very difficult.
Well, it's gone far beyond that. My younger son's roommate from Swarthmore went to University of Pennsylvania for a PhD in physics, and his is on human behavior with respect to financial decisions. And that's in physics, a PhD. I mean, that's way far out math.
Yeah, well.
It's beyond linear regression.
Well, that's essentially where this behavioral science guy was going in Crime and Punishment. You're talking about J.P. Morgan getting this billion-dollar fine for essentially cornering the metal market and what it was, the bond market too, right? I don't think it
bonds? Yeah.
I didn't think it had anything to do with securities. I don't believe, at least in the article I read. But the idea comes down, and his point was, if you assume crooks essentially are rational. Now, we're not talking about, you know, people who go rape and pillage and shoot people and that kind of stuff. They're probably not rational. But basically, regular, shall we say, money crooks are rational in his mind. So if you think of that, then what you need to have happen, your crime and punishment then becomes easy. The fine, and maybe it's changed now. He thought that basically 85% of crimes were property crimes. And he said, in order for you, and if you assume you're not going to put people in jail or whatever you're going to do, he left that part out. He said the fine has to be at least whatever you took divided by your chance of getting caught. So the act of performing the crime becomes at least a neutral, maybe a bad deal for the crook, right? And
exactly.
So in other words, you can't, if you put a sign up at the 7-Eleven, steal up to 10, this is Kim Fox, steal up to 10 cases of beer and we won't prosecute, you're not going to find anybody who steals 11, right? Unless he's a real idiot.
Unless he can't count.
You know, so his point was, now I'm going to say that however much J.P. Morgan made on this, and what would you say the chance of getting caught? 10% maybe? I'm going to say that the
Well, they never told us how much
right.
they made.
That's right. That well, that's was, part of the that's part
the second
of,
sentence. I said, wait a minute, how much did they make?
That's my whole point. Is that if other than if they made $10 billion, the board's going to say, you go, girl, right? We only got to kick back $1 billion 10 years later. Now, if they made $3 billion, and there's a 10% chance of being caught, according to this guy, and I would agree with 100%, the fine should be $30 billion, and the people on the board should probably resign. If it was that, you wouldn't have it happening. Now, does anybody think that this is going to be a deterrent for J.P. Morgan? If they give a rat's behind about the fact that they were in a paper as a no good Nick kid that got spanked 20 years ago or 10 years ago.
Same. We've seen it again and again.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Go back to the mortgage. Don't forget to throw in Chase, J.P. Morgan.
Yeah. Well, what I'm saying is because we don't even take the little bit of common sense and say if you steal a case of beer and there's a half a 50-50 chance you get caught, the penalty should be two cases, right? This is simple math. And I'm going to say that J.P. Morgan and those guys made way more than $1 billion in the years they did that.
How many cases of beer is that?
That's a lot. It's probably a whole Coors factory worth.
Right. So my attitude is, why are we upset about the cases of beer?
But it's the same formula. I mean,
The same formula. It's amazing the amount of corporate crap like that going on.
But when you say, you know, it's interesting.
It's just.
See, you set me off here, Frankie. You said that it's a difference between a case of beer. Whatever. I read this study years ago, not many years ago, maybe a decade. They asked people of all different income levels how much money they needed to basically set their life straight. No BS about winning the lottery and, you know. You watch a show on TV where the guy becomes a real estate agent for people who just won the lottery? Weird little guy with all kinds of tattoos, not that that's bad. And it gets these ladies like winning $1 billion out of West Virginia and they're looking for their dream home and they're trying to find a place for like $100,000 somewhere. You know, type. Anyway, the point was at every level, according to this dude, it basically comes down to one or two months paycheck. That's how far everybody, if you make $30,000 a year, if you make $150,000, whether you make $500,000 a year, that's how far just about everybody is out on their skis. I don't know if it's still the same today, but it's basically that's everybody's a little out on their credit card, has a little bit of this, have somebody in school where the tuition, something, or they need a car or something. Basically, if you give them, was it 1 or 2 months pay, they say thank you very much, and they're essentially flat again. I wonder if you redid that today, if you get the same thing.
I wouldn't think so.
I wouldn't either.
When you look at average credit card debt. And throw in student loans.
Yeah, those were not a big thing when you did this study. Yeah, a lot of people have. I mean, one month's pay doesn't
that's
help.
That's sort of Damocles among the over the millennials. And now I just read that the millennials are going to be the first group to do worse than their parents.
Yeah. What about
financially? And of course, there's a certain segment that will blame the kids or the group, not the economy or the system.
No. Speaking of the system, we're down another 25 spoos. So you added that yesterday, we're We're pushing 100. In fact, we're over 100. It's only been a two-day event. So, well, one day and not even started today event. Where do you think this goes, Frank?
I see, and you know I'm not a chartist, but I listen to people and I watch all the time. 3,200 is a massive support level.
From where? Pearl mentioned that yesterday. A lady in our office, she's a chartist. I was looking at the graph. I look at the graphs and I'm like, I don't know what all these people are looking at. Well, what?
I'm a simplistic chartist. I give me a ruler and a pencil. I don't care about Fibonacci numbers. I just look at it. I mean, you and I reduce things to the lowest common denominator. I'm going, hey, this looks. This is where I would get worried in trading it. You know, this is where I will have a plan if it goes below 3,200. And the other one that scares the bejesus out of me is 2,950. And that's another 250 lower.
Well, in last July, we made it to 3,400 in March, all right? And then we went all the way down to 2,200. Then we bounced back to 3,200, came back down, went to 32 a little bit and something, came back down, and then we broke through it again, I will say, to stay, maybe not to stay, in August. And then we tapped out about, I'm using the spiders, just multiplying by 10. Spiders got to 359 on the 2nd of September, which I think was was certainly an all-time high in the last 2 years. Maybe it wasn't all-time. And now we're down to 320.50. So we're down, it's almost 30 points, so we're down 10% in the spiders from the top tick. Is that because it's a 10% move? Is that why we think there's support? I mean, I don't see any obvious spot on the graph here where 3,200 was an old low or anything. I mean, I don't see it. Maybe the other guys see it. Do you?
Well, I'm pure qualitative when it comes to this. It looks that way, you know? Okay. I don't have a chart in front of me. I could be more eloquent about it.
Well, I mean, in general, you and I look at big
trees
numbers.
Changing color in Vermont. Your second East Coaster in a row.
Yeah, well, you should stop in and say hello to Dr. Blade and get shrunk.
Well, that's a full-time job.
Yeah, I'm saying, he might have his best new patient. is there a spot here? Why do you think the carnage in metals? Just because? I mean, a dollar's racing up. That would do it. I hope the listeners by this time understand it's not a metals story, it's a dollar story. Now, is the dollar...
Everything's going to be a dollar story.
Yes. Now, is that going up just because UK is basically committing ritual Harry Carey over there, or what?
I don't know. I think I hear Boris Johnson's doing a very good job.
From
everything
who?
I've heard.
So, what's your opinion, not that you've ever been in a saloon, what happens between 10 and 11 that you can only catch COVID then and not before?
I have no idea. You know, I'm part of that group that's not getting COVID. Out here in Vermont, everybody's wearing masks, even outside, even construction workers. I'm amazed.
Okay. Why don't you go around and do a sample of when's the last time they washed that mask or changed it?
That's your job. You're the one who cares.
Ah, you just say as long as
I would have to start with caring first.
Okay, so you're as our buddy Carl says, if it was a diaper, it'd be okay?
People clean the diapers multiple times.
Yes, well, you'd have to. A little more smelly, but...
That just tells me if Carl wouldn't clean his mask every day, he doesn't clean his diaper every day.
Oh, God.
I'm going with it.
Is there an area here... God, I talked to two people the other way. They were bound and determined that they were going to be richest men on earth on this Tesla battery day, and where's the stock down? 50, 60 bucks from the unimpressive battery day, or what? I had a stock was, where was it 2 days ago? It was, 450 and the 21st. And now it's, where are we now? We're, 366. That's a waste. $90, $85 in 3 days. So much for the battery
day. Yep. Well, I was going to say, remember when it hit 500, I said 300 before 900, and all of a sudden, I guess it was at 450.
Did you buy
puts? 300 before 500. I may end up being right, even though it's hit 500 a couple times since then.
What after if you had a sec, if you were dive bombing the market here and you're looking for an area, which is not a bad idea, by the way, unless the whole world changes, which I don't know, you can never really tell when that's happening. But is there an area? Is there a section? Is there a stack? Is there a place where you'd say, look, all of the whole water's coming out of the tub, I'm going to keep my eye on Verizon or Microsoft or Johnson & Johnson or someplace, and the minute it reaches this spot, I'm in, because these guys are doing way better than that, and it's just a... Is there some place you like? I mean, it looks to me like...
You know, I do like Johnson & Johnson, and that was one of your picks.
Yep.
You know, Frank, look at this, and this was, what, a couple, 3 weeks ago, because it not only is it pharmaceutical, it's consumer.
Well, my elves tell me, the people who write in, that the leaders in the virus derby as of 3 weeks ago were AstraZeneca and Johnson & Johnson. You know, but that's since then. Now people like the Pfizer product too, right? Well, AstraZeneca, the story there, I think, Frank, was that they had some. They were doing a real lot of. I think SARS was a bigger deal in Europe than here, correct?
Mm-hmm.
And I think AstraZeneca got real far down the pipeline in coming up with a, I won't say a vaccine, I'll say a shot or a antibody shot for SARS. And there appear to be some similarities, right? They're both COVIDs.
Right.
And so I think some people thought that put them on a fast track. Now, who the hell knows whether that's true or not.
Well, and from a stock-picking standpoint, another good thing about Johnson & Johnson is people are okay with Johnson & Johnson. And baby powder might have been problematic, but Americans tend to trust Johnson
yes.
& Johnson.
And they were...
You know, it has a century of...
Well, they bought that... They
mom
bought
holding
that,
the baby.
Well, yeah, they bought that little company a few months ago that was had something going on with the COVID, right? So they went out and got somebody
yep.
who I think probably was further along than them. They never really say that. So, but I mean, there's still, what, five or six play. I mean, everybody's got a spot in there. Merck's in there. So it's trying to, you're trying to figure out. But they gave all these guys money, Frank. What's the huge advantage for the one or two that actually win? I mean, because they all seem to have gotten somewhere between, and I have this thing somewhere. I mean, I sent it to you. There were like six companies all got between $10 and $20 a shot. A dose, for lack of a better term, for like 100 million doses. So everybody got somewhere in a billion
to
range.
Billion.
Yeah, a billion to two range. Sort of depending on whether you got less money per dose if they gave you hundreds of million dollars to get the program started. So if you already got your money, you got less for the dosage. There was a little common sense in the, you know, from the little bit I read, that if your firm got, you know, 400 million to get you started, you might be getting, you know, a billion for the 100 million doses. Somebody else, if you did the research on your own, you might be getting $15 or $20 a dose, right? Is that what you read out of that?
That sort of bothers me that it's a race to get it done.
Well,
at least the consortium of vaccine makers said, hey, we're going to follow certain guidelines and we aren't going to succumb to any political pressure. We'll wait and see.
Well, the pressure
is... The advantage for Johnson & Johnson is it's a one-shot vaccine. It's not a two-stage.
Yeah, well, but I mean, the deal is, for those who may not have been listening, those couple days we talked about it, is what do they call it? Operation something? It's like Operation Warp Speed or something? Is that what it is? Something like
mm-hmm.
that. What they did is, if there's six companies, then who knows where the lobbyists were on this. Frank, we'd be much better off if we were a health industry lobby this last few months, I'm thinking.
I'd be much better off if I had been Jared Kushner's roommate.
Yeah. Or if you could come back as Tommy Boggs, who unfortunately passed away.
I'd be much better off if I came back as you, Tom.
Oh, God. Yeah, I don't think you want that. Anyway, what they did with this, say there's six or seven companies, right, Frank? I don't know, but somewhere five, six, or seven. We only got a couple seconds here. And they said that have vaccines on the way. They said, start making the vaccines now. So if something, and the government's paying for it, which is probably a good idea. I'm not saying it's horrible. So the idea is if something gets approved on Thanksgiving, they're giving shots the next day, right? They want them all ready.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not so sure that's a horrible idea. I'm saying that, but that's the drill. So there's like six or seven of those companies out there. And if they have to throw away five of the company's stuff, that's fine if the other two work. right? According to it's the mantra. Anyway, Frank, we got a dash, but SP Futures.
Okay, well, it's not bad because given how much we've thrown away already,
The
others just pennies in the pot. Okay, have a great day, Thomas.
NASDAQ down 160. Ouch. We'll be back tomorrow. Stocks and Jacks.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI ProDirect. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.